This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
And hello, radio listeners, and welcome to Radio Reading Services presentation of the Cincinnati Enquirer's comic section for today, Sunday, April the 28th, 2024. This is your host, Bob Wiley, speaking. We're going to start the day off with Garfield by Jim Davis. Well, the scene opens up with Garfield laying in bed with his blanket wrapped around him. He's got his head poking out, and he's holding his left arm up in the air with his fist closed and one little index finger pointing up in the air. And he's looking at us and he says, "You know why nothing beats a good night's sleep? Let us not overlook the noble nap." So then we go to the next panel, and here he is, sound asleep in the reclining chair in front of the TV. And the caption says, "There's the recliner, soap opera nap." And the TV is saying, "Oh, John. Oh, Marcia." Garfield is saying, "Snore." Then there's the bored to tears nap, and here comes John. He's trying to talk to Garfield, and John is saying, "Then I said, gingham, plaid, what's the difference?" Garfield, cutting Z's face down on the table. Then there's the iconic sunbeam nap, and here's Garfield laying in the sunbeam on the floor, coming to the window, sound asleep. Then finally he sits up straight, and he sighs. He looks at us, and he says, "So many naps and so little time." Burroughs Before Swine by Stephen Pastis. Well, Rat is sitting in the breakfast room with a cup of coffee and an empty plate in front of him. He's looking quite morose, quite unhappy. And Pig walks in, a bright ray of sunshine, big smile on his face, ears all out. He says, "What's the matter with you, Rat?" And Rat says, "I am not a morning person, and I'm having a bad day." "Oh," says Smiley Pig, "hang on, I have just what you need." "Well, what is it?" says Rat. And Pig comes in carrying this great big wooden sign. He says, "I'll show you. You see, I finally realized that happiness is a choice. And while you can't always choose what happens to you, you can choose how you respond." And he holds up this big sign. It's all yellow on the painted on the front of it. And there's two statements. One says, "I choose happiness," and a white square for a check mark after them. The second line says, "I'll remain miserable," and a check mark for that. So Pig holds the sign up and says, "So go ahead, choose." Rat reaches over and picks up the red pen, puts a big check mark in the "I'll remain miserable" square. Then he picks up the sign, breaks it over Pig's head. Pig's down on the floor seeing stars. And Rat looks over at Goat sitting next to him, and Rat saying, "Never taunt a non-morning person." Peanuts featuring good old Charlie Brown. Well, Snoopy and Woodstock are going to be playing doubles tennis. They're partners. And Snoopy's having a little instruction class with Woodstock. Now, of course, Snoopy's got a standard tennis racket in his hand. A little tiny Woodstock's got a little tiny racket in his hand. That racket's not as big as a tennis ball. And Snoopy is saying, "Okay, partner, the secret to being a good doubles team is cooperation. So," he says, "if I say crossover, you run to the other side immediately. If I say yours, you take it. But if I say mine, then, well, I'll take it. Okay, now, let's show them how." They get all set, ready for the first serve to come in. Snoopy's looking determined. Woodstock's not quite so certain. And here comes a serve. A 90-mile-an-hour serve. Pow! Right there where Woodstock is. Blows through his racket. Tips him upside down. Snoopy watches the ball go by. Looks over and says, yours. Marmaduke by Brad and Paul Anderson. Well, one of Billy's friends is over with Billy, and they're watching TV along with Marmaduke in between the two of them, and they're looking at a football match, a football flying through the air in a football game. And Billy's friend says, "Does Marmaduke like football? Does Marmaduke have a favorite sport?" Billy says, "Yeah, all of them. You know," he says, "Marmaduke is the best receiver ever in football." And he shows Marmaduke flying down the field with a ball in his mouth and the kids' football team all chasing after him. Then there's never been an outfielder like Marmaduke in all of baseball. And it shows Marmaduke leaping up in the air and grabbing a baseball on the fly as it's coming down. And then he says, there's never been a soccer team who could trap him. And here's the girls' soccer team. They're all surrounding Marmaduke, who's got the ball in his mouth. I don't think that's legal. But they're all trying to trap him and box him in. And Billy's friend says, wow, everybody must want Marmaduke on their team. Well, he says, not really, because they go to the final panel. Here's Marmaduke in his doghouse with a football, a frisbee, a soccer ball, a basketball, a baseball, just all kinds of equipment, even a cricket bat sitting on the ground that he's all pulled in. And here comes all the players from all the teams. And Billy says, no, not really. In the Doggone Funny article, this one comes to us from Davenport, Iowa. Fletcher, a 66-pound yellow lab therapy dog, went to stay with Ron Johnson and his rat terrier named Cooper, while Ron put their food bowls at opposite ends of the kitchen. Then, Fletcher and Cooper immediately ran to each other's bowls and began chowing down. You know, food tastes better when it belongs to somebody else. Let's go to Family Circus by Bill and Jeff Keane. Well, this is going to be a bunch of little single-panel vignettes, and the major caption is, and now the weather. And so the first caption is titled, Intermittent Showers. And here's Mom opening the shower door where the three boys, Billy and Jeffy and PJ, are each taking their turns going in and out of the shower. The next caption is titled, Temperature Above Normal. And here's Mom taking Jeffy's temperature lying in bed. The next caption is Warming Trend. And here is Billy and Dolly and Jeffy in the kitchen with Mom. She's pulling out freshly baked muffins. Yeah, warming trend. The next one is titled Sun Rises at 5:46 a.m. And sun is spelled S-O-N. And here's Jeffy crawling out of bed at 5:46 in the morning. The next one is titled Windy. Dad is trying to read the newspaper, and his little daughter, Dolly, is standing on a stool right next to him on the couch, just chattering away with all the things she wants to tell him while he's trying to read. Next is titled Cloudburst, and here's PJ just blowing out tears every which way. The next one says Foggy, and here is Billy sitting at the homework table. Dad's trying to help him with the textbook open, and both of them are scratching their heads. Don't understand the homework, Foggy. Next one is titled Floods. And here is a full bathtub with Billy and Jeffy playing like crazy and the water sloshing all over the bathroom floor outside of the bathroom tub. Final panel says, extremely dry. Here's all the kids, all four of them, running up to Mom, who's got a freshly made pitcher of lemonade. Baby Blues by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott. Well, Daryl is on the phone talking to his wife, Wanda. He's at work. He says, you know, I was just thinking, dear, about how great you looked this morning. Now it shows her at the other end of the line at home, smiling on her face. He continues talking. He says, your skin was glowing. Your hair was shiny. You know, motherhood really agrees with you. Well, thank you, she says. But then we go and look at where she is. She says, so far, it's the only thing that does. And here's Zoe on one side of her saying, you're wrong. This shirt looks stupid. Then there's Hammy on the other side going, forget it. You can't make me. And little Wren is down in front of her just saying, no, 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 no. Foxtrot by Bill Amend. Well, the scene opens up with Andrea, the mother. She's talking to her daughter, Paige, who's just come in from school looking a little unhappy. And Andrea says, sweetheart, what's wrong? Paige says, well, some girls at school teased me for listening to the new Taylor Swift album 53 times in its first week. Mom reaches up, takes her hand, says, oh, kids can be really mean. I'm sorry. But you know, still, you do have to admit that 53 times is a little excessive. Paige says, excessive? What are you talking about? And the mom catches on real quickly, says, or is this because you listened to it only 53 times? And Paige starts crying. They said I should turn in my Swifty card. Baldo by Hector Cantu and Carlos Castellanos. Well, Tia Carmen, Aunt Carmen, is in the kitchen. She's doing some baking. And little Gracie is sitting at the floor, standing on the floor next to her, watching up in anticipation. In the kitchen comes Baldo, her big brother. Gracie immediately runs out of the kitchen. She goes and gets a guitar. She comes back, brings it in the kitchen, and she starts playing it very badly. Twang, twang. It's as loud as she can be, louder and louder, and Baldo grabs his ears and runs out of the room. He can't stand the sound. At this point, though, the muffins are done, and Tia Carmen brings them over and puts them on the table, and here Miss Gracie having all the muffins and cookies all to herself. Big smug smile on her face. Dennis and Menace by Hank Ketchum. Dennis comes running outside the house over to the fence where the Wilsons are next door. Mr. Wilson, George, is working with a rake, and Mrs. Wilson is doing some sprucing up with a little trowel. And Dennis says, "We went to that new seafood restaurant last night." Martha says, "Well, that sounds like so much fun." And Dennis says, "Yeah, and I got an idea. Why don't you come with us next time?" Mrs. Wilson says, "Oh, seafood, do they serve crabs?" Dennis says, "Sure, Mr. Wilson can come too." I'll let you imagine the sudden look on his face. Crabgrass by Tawheed Bondian. Well, we've got Miles and Kevin sitting in the school cafeteria having lunch, and they're eating hamburgers. And Miles looks over, and Kevin says, "Hey, do you know why they call them hamburgers?" Kevin looks over knowingly, a little disgustedly. Maybe because they're made of ham. "Well, actually," says Kevin, about to re-inform him. And then Kevin speaks out to the rest of the cafeteria. "Hey, did you really not know that? Hey, everybody, can you believe Mr. Know-It-All didn't know that hamburgers are made of ham?" And the entire cafeteria comes back with one voice saying, "They're made of beef." Now we look. Miles is sitting here just kind of smugly smiling, and Kevin has got his eyes popped open in surprise. He looks over with depredation at Kevin, and he says, "You know, English is so dumb." And Miles' response is, "Well, actually, the word is German." Now, with that, I had a question myself. What is the origin of hamburger? So here's what I've learned. One origin story suggests that the hamburger's name derives not from Germany, but from New York State. Brothers Charles and Frank Mencius were sold out of sausage at the stand at a fair in Hamburg, New York. So they swapped in cooked ground beef mixed with coffee and brown sugar to add flavor, and they served it as a sandwich. And they called it a hamburger after Frank spotted the town's name on a banner at the fair. But based on real etymology, dictionary.com defines hamburger as a word from the 19th century Germany meaning from the German city of Hamburg. But the origin actually goes back a little bit further in history. Though beef and mutton are likely to have been eaten for centuries during the 13th century in Mongolia, the Tartars are known to have eaten raw, spiced mutton. Yeah. But with increased trade and travel, the next few centuries saw minced beef tartare being eaten by sailors around the Baltic Sea until eventually reaching the German port of Hamburg, where local preference meant that the meat was instead cooked, according to the USDA. Known as a Hamburg steak or a fricadelli, raw meat was minced finely, seasoned simply, and formed into patties before being cooked and enjoyed by townspeople. Two pieces of trivia you probably could have done just as well without. Zits by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman. This is a one-panel strip. We're at school, but the kids are all over the place. They've got inner tubes around themselves, a sliding on water slides down the middle of the hall, carrying surfboards. Hector's off to one side wearing a Hawaiian shirt, playing guitar. Pierce is barbecuing something, some hamburgers and hot dogs in the hall. There's hammocks spread out. And Jeremy and Sarah are walking down the hall looking at all this. And Jeremy says, "Tell me it's the last month of school without telling me it's the last month of school." Luann by Greg and Karen Evans. Well, Luann is shopping, and she's gone to the register to get a cup of coffee at a coffee shop. And the clerk at the cash register hands her a receipt, and she says, "Here you go." And Luann says, "Well, thank you." Now she goes over and sits down next to her friend Bernice, and she looks at Bernice suddenly, and she says, "You know, thank you? What was I thanking her for? Just handing me my $6 receipt? I helped pay her salary. She should have said thank you to me. Why do we all do this? It's just so stupid and wrong. Yeah, says Bernice, but do you mean the thank you or the $6 mocha grande? Jumpstart by Rob Armstrong. Well, we're at the Canine Training Academy at the police department, and Joe and Crunchy are visiting, and they're actually bringing Mortimer back. He apparently ran home for a while and escaped, but they're bringing him back. And here's Doug Hall, who's a canine trainer, and Joe says, Doug, I'm really sorry this keeps happening. And Joe laughs. He says, it's okay, Joe. I don't mind when Mortimer sneaks away to be with you. You know, he thinks you and Crunchy are canine officers. And here's Crunchy over to one side wearing one of those dog sleeves that dogs can attack and keep from getting bitten while the dogs learn how to fight. And Mortimer's chewing on that sleeve. And then Doug walks up and holds the two guys on each shoulder and puts his hand on each of their shoulders and says, want me to train you guys? Crunches, can't teach an old dog like me new tricks. But Joe is now looking at that canine sleeve, and he takes it and he walks home. And we go down to the bathtub at home. Here is Teddy and Tommy in the bathtub with Mortimer getting ready to dive in and go after the sock nest monster, except this time the sock nest monster, who is Joe, is now wearing that canine sleeve, and Mortimer is stopping in mid-leap, in mid-air. For Better or for Worse by Lynn Johnson. Now, this is the last follow-up, I think, to the story where Farley died saving little April from drowning in the river. And Elizabeth and her best friend, Paula, are walking up the hillside next to a little tree where Farley was buried. And Paula says, is this the place? Uh-huh, says Elizabeth. I'm really sorry, Liz. She puts her arm around her, and Liz says, yeah, thanks, me too. You know, I'm glad they let us bury him here. We're going to call this Farley's Tree when it's warm enough. And when it's warm enough, we're going to plant some flowers. Oh, that's nice, says Paula. Elizabeth says, you know, I didn't think I'd miss him like this. I never thought that a dog could mean so much. I know, his friend says. Sometimes I think I'll see him again. I try to imagine what heaven is like, what it's like to be there. Paula says, do you believe in ghosts, Elizabeth? No, not really, Elizabeth says. But you know, it's strange. And it's probably just my imagination. Oh, what, says Paula. Elizabeth says, sometimes I do hear the sound of his collar, just as if he was walking beside me. And now the cartoonist has drawn in a ghost image of Farley, leaping alongside, smiling up happily at the two of them. Yep. Here's a comment from Lynn about this strip this week. She said, Lynn is the cartoonist. Some readers made fun of this idea that Farley lived on a spiritual form, but, you know, others were comforted by this Sunday page. The death of the Patterson family dog was an emotional story for so many, and I wanted it to end on a positive note. Hagar the Horrible by Dick Brown and Chris Brown. Well, Hagar is sitting on a big, large park bench down on one side, and down on the other end of the bench is this guy who's really critical of everybody around him. Here comes a woman walking her dog. The dog walks up to sniff the guy's feet, and he says, hey, lady, pull that ugly mutt away from me. Here comes a big, strong-looking fella, a little overweight, a little obese, big belly, and the guy points to him and says, hey, you're walking in the wrong direction, tubby. The all-you-can-eat restaurant is that way, pointing behind him. And about this time, there's this great big pow that we see as we look at Hagar's face, and Hagar says, I'm sorry. And the guy says, well, why are you sorry? Hagar says, because somebody else beat me to the punch. Beetle Bailey by Mort Walker. Well, Beetle and Plato and Killer are on the squad's bowling team, and they're in the bowling alley. And Killer looks at Beetle, who's getting ready to throw the ball. He says, we're behind, but, you know, we can win just if you get a single strike. Oh, says Beetle, I'm nervous. Killer says, oh, no, puts his hand on the shoulder. You can do this. Plato walks up, puts his hand on the other shoulder, says, relax, just take your time. Well, okay, says Beetle. And he stands up in front of that. He gets to relaxing, and he relaxes, and his head tips down, and he's still holding the ball. Plato looks at Killer and says, is he asleep? Killer says, you should not have told him to relax. Blondie by Dean Young and John Marshall.
Well, Dagwood is in Lou's diner having lunch, and he's looking at the menu, and he says, "Do you know if the eggs are conventional or free-range?" Lou looks over and says, "I don't know. I'll have to ask the chef." He sticks his head in the kitchen. "Are the eggs conventional or free-range?" Chef says, "Oh, you got me." "Well," says Dagwood, when Lou comes back out, and Lou says, "We're going with free-range." Then he says, "Are they organic?" Lou says, "You got me, but hey, why the sudden interest in eggs?" "Oh, no reason," says Dagwood. "I'm just curious." So Lou says, "Well, then, why don't you just have a nice bowl of oatmeal this morning?" Dagwood says, "Is it regular or instant oatmeal?" Pickles by Brian Crane. Well, Opal is in the living room. She's doing some cleaning and fixing up, and she's singing to herself, "Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something's good." And then she moves on a little bit further down the room, and Nelson walks in. He's listening to her singing, and she's carrying a load of laundry. She's saying, "There's a place for us, somewhere a place for us." Nelson says, "You like to sing, don't you, Grandma?" She says, "Oh, yes, especially while I do housework. You know, it drives Grandpa crazy, though. He gets the songs stuck in his head, and then he finds himself singing them without even realizing, sometimes singing them out loud. You know, lately I've been singing all the songs from West Side Story." Which takes us to the final panel. Here is Earl out in the park, sitting on the bench with his best friend Clyde, both reading the newspaper. And Earl unknowingly is singing, "I feel pretty, oh so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and gay." Imagine the look on Clyde's face. Let's do a Crankshaft by Batiuk and Davis. Well, there's a character in the strip for the last few days. His name is Batten Thomas. I don't think he's a real character. It's not real clear, but he apparently has written a book called Drums Along the Sidelines. Take off on drums along the Mohawk, I guess. And he's talking with Lillian, who is the librarian at the books selling shop. And he's saying, "Thanks for inviting me back to do a signing at your bookstore, Lillian." And he says, "You know, you really have a nice place here." She says, "Well, thank you, but you know, there is one thing about your book that puzzles me." And Batten says, "What's that?" And she says, "Having a foreword that was written by John Philip Sousa." Batten says, "Is it obvious that I faked it?" Non Sequitur by Wiley. Well, this is a scene of just images until we get the very last panel. The first image is a caveman carrying a spear coming up alongside the ocean, trying to spear some fish in the ocean. And he looks up, and here comes this gigantic tidal wave, which lands on top of him, washes him out to sea. He's hanging on to a log that was washed out with him. He's been there all day long. The sun's going down at night. He's getting ready to spend the night on the water, out of sight of land everywhere. And as the sun goes down and the moon starts to come up, down sweeps a giant sea eagle, picks him up, flies off into the direction of the moon, heads toward land, drops him over land into a lake. The caveman lands in the lake, crawls out of the lake, gets up on land. Now that takes us to the final panel. And here is Captain Eddie at the bar with Joe Pyle and Flo Pyle at the counter. And Captain Eddie said, "And that's how my ancestor got here first." And Flo looks over to her husband, Joe, and says, "You just had to ask for his thoughts on immigration, didn't you?" Ziggy by Tom Wilson. Well, Ziggy's sitting at the end of a pier talking to his dog, looking out of the ocean, and Ziggy is saying, "I've been waiting for my ship to come in for so long, I'm beginning to think it's plotted its course through the Bermuda Triangle." The Born Loser by Art and Chip Sansom. Well, Brutus is having lunch with his Uncle Ted, and Uncle Ted is saying, "Last night I had the most vivid dream. I dreamed I was a kid again, back in my elementary school. All of my old friends and my teachers were there. It felt so real. It was as if I was living it again. I woke up with a smile on my face." "Hey, that's very good," says Brutus. And then Uncle Ted says, "You know, if you could go back and live your life again, Brutus, what would you choose to do?" And Brutus comes back and says, could I use someone else's life instead? And that brings us to our last panel of the day. This is Frank and Ernest by Bob and Tom Thays. Remember, Sunday's kind of a special day with this strip. They do all kinds of odd things. And today we're doing puns. So some of these puns won't be good puns until I can spell out some of the words, but we'll do our best. And it starts off with a TV show going Eyeball News, and Frank and Ernie are the newscasters on the news. They're reading into the camera. And Frank is saying, welcome in tonight's news. Our lovely food critic talks about two terrific ice cream places she discovered last weekend. And Ernie says, in other words, Sweet Sue gives us a double scoop on her Sunday travels, S-U-N-D-A-E. Then Frank goes on. He says, oh, then the Wilsons offer gardening tips on April seed plants. Ernie comes back saying, Rosemary and Herb give sage advice in time for spring, T-H-Y-M-E. Frank keeps on trying. And our meteorologist gives a quick recap for those just tuning in. Ernie, sunny day, S-O-N-N-Y, sunny day breezes through the forecast again, whether or not you missed, M-I-S-T, missed it. Then we have Frank looking at Ernie. He says, now you've done it, Ernie. Your dumb jokes made our financial whiz walk out of here without leaving his hot tip for the day. Ernie's response, wow, our rich man took stock and split. No, correction. Our rich man took stock and split without so much as a good buy. B-U-Y. And that does it. That wraps it up. This concludes our readings of the Cincinnati, or the comic section of the Cincinnati Inquirer for today, Sunday, April the 28th, 2024. We'll be back next week at the same time, so tune in then. But for now, this is Bob Wiley saying farewell and wishing you all a day full of happiness and, of course, laughs.